Let me give a personal note first. I appreciate and feel very blessed when I'm able to live in Christian community. Mary and I experienced 7 years of close Christian community in the inner city of Washington, D.C., and count those some of the best years of our life. They were very turbulent years, 1965 to 73. The city exploded in 68 when Martin Luther King was killed. They were the civil disobedience or the riots, depending upon who was writing about it in the paper. It was the years of the protest marches and students sleeping in your basement and members of our community arrested for protesting and things like that. But the closeness of that community was one of the real experiences of our life. The change from there and a mountain in West Virginia, the primary change we felt was the lack of Christian community. So I've already told the Holden village when I came that we were looking forward to that kind of closeness again. And I will choose Christian community even when the closeness gets irritating. A Jesuit friend of mine trying to deal with one parishioner who was a lace curtain Irish Catholic. You have to know some history to know what kind that is, but I'll let you image what that might be. When she was giving him fits, one said to me, "I have no trouble with the faith, it's the faithful I can't stand." All right. Even when that's true, I will choose Christian community, I think. And in all of the things I've heard or read about Christian community, and there are volumes written, two things stand out in my mind as being helpful. One was a talk, and I don't have the transcript for that. It was a talk given by Lonzo Del Vasto. Gave it in Washington, D.C. He's the head of a community called the Society of the Ark in France. If you get a chance, does the bookstore still have Return to the Source? Excellent journal, autobiographical writing of Lonzo Del Vasto's pilgrimage, trying to find what gave Gandhi his commitment to satyagraha, or nonviolence. Just a beautifully written journal, if you like that kind of writing, I recommend it. In the talk he gave in Washington, D.C., he said a healthy community will have three aspects to it. One, it will have a shared faith. There has to be some affirmation that people share together as to what they believe, and I think Holden has that. There must be some way in which they celebrate that faith, and for a Christian community, that's the worship life, that's the liturgy, that's the drama that lets us keep alive that story. The third one is some action outside of itself, and I think sometimes that's the place at which Christian communities fall down. When they exist only for one another, even with a strong faith and a way to celebrate that, you're missing that third leg that is required for health. And I think I've said that a couple times since we came, and I hope that Holden always has that reason for existence beyond ourselves. The other thing that I have found helpful is this article, which is fairly old now. You'll find that it's dated. It starts with the watching on TV, the dying in Vietnam, uses the phrase hippie, that's a dated phrase now. It was given to the liturgical conference. The audience was primarily priests and nuns, and it was given by a practicing psychiatrist. But it seems to me that sometimes for us to talk community, it's helpful to have some point of reference, like this article. In other words, that we're reflecting on it, not just continuing to talk about our common life. Holden this summer is primarily what the Holy Spirit fashions with us. Holden has a history, and that's part of what fashions this place, but primarily it's us and what happens here this summer. And it seems to me that that experience of community might be more helpful for all of us if we do some reflecting on it. That's why I've suggested tonight and suggested this article. I'm a realist. I'm aware that probably all of you have not read it in its entirety. I think many of you have. I've seen you reading it. Just so that we have some basis on which to start, if someone didn't read it, let me just give a few of the things that it said to me, and then we'll plunge into discussion. One of the main things he calls for is to experience a real community, and says psychologically it's very easy to have your own fantasy community. That sometimes community is in your mind, and therefore, and he gives some illustrations, some people feel more sad about a soap opera and somebody dying on there than they do real death. Some people get all shook when Rex Morgan doesn't marry June Gale, or I don't know what, that's a dated one too, isn't it? Did he ever marry that poor nurse in that house? The primary reason why we should experience at some point a real community is in your fantasy community, you can control it. You can manipulate it. It's not real people. Therefore, there's less chance that you'll grow. That's one of the things that he tries to make a continuing theme throughout this short speech. I think another thing that he wants you to know is that community living is, I think he uses the phrase, a step above individual living. I think sometimes people say, I can't really do it on my own, therefore I'll move into a community, as though somehow that's easier. He says three or four times in different ways, don't expect to find your identity by the group giving it to you. Can't do that. And he really talks about a level of maturity before you try that. And he gives some warnings about some things that community cannot do. One is to give you your identity. The other is to satisfy your need for personal love. Don't expect a group to do that. Some of those things, and he's heavily into the psychology of community, but it seems to me those are some of his themes. One of the possibilities in community that means it might be a chance for growth is it is one of the ways in which you find a mirror for yourself. And when there is some level of concern and care and also honesty, I think we can be in for a good experience. Let me give you an illustration of that. In the community of Christ one night, and we had a very close community, and the commitments we made to one another were for 6 months at a time. Holden has a lot more transition than that, and I'm aware of that. But when you say, I'm going to stay with you for 6 months, eyeball to eyeball, with all the ups and downs of that, then you have some freedom. And one night, one person of the community tended to talk in pious religious language. Usually there was an easy religious answer when someone had a problem. And one of the others in the group turned and said, the arrogance of your Christian humility makes me sick. And then we had a good talk. And in this case, it was a person who was able to grow, and the person who said that really cared for. In fact, she baked him a cake the next day. All right, when that can happen, then I think you're in for an experience that might be helpful. The Church of the Savior in Washington, D.C., Gordon Cosby is the pastor. There are many books. They're usually written by Elizabeth O'Connor. Eighth Day of Creation. What are some others, Mary? Call to Commitment was the first one. All right, that's the newest one. Inward Journey, Outward Journey. Our Many Selves. All right. We were located three blocks from the Church of the Savior, and some of the early experiences in the community of Christ were with them, and I respect them very much. One night in one of their small groups, they evoke gifts. In other words, they have a way in which, when something has to be done, they have a common way in which some division of duties are made. Well, they needed a worship leader for this group for the next 12 weeks. And one of the members of the group was a senior at Wesley Seminary, was going to be a Methodist preacher within 8 months. So he said, well, I'll do that. I'm in seminary. And 10 other people said, no, you're really not very good at leading worship. And what a blow. You know, 8 months from now, he was going to be a professional leading worship. But he worked through that. He's a better pastor for that today. Very seldom do you have a group who, because they care for you, are that kind of mirror for you. And it seems to me, unless you have some kind of openness like that, you're not going to really have the experience that you might have. With those general themes, then McAllister has some communities that just don't quite make it, and he has titles to them. I'll just review those and then we'll start. The fantasy community is the one that's only in my imagination. If you've read Bonhoeffer, we're always dreaming of the ideal community instead of experiencing the real one that we're in. The comfortable community. He has one phrase. I think that's enough to tell you what it is. It's a snob club. All right. The disintegrating community is the one where too many people are trying to get their own needs met. And finally, it disintegrates because they've come to find their identity there, to let the group give them their identity. One of the ways you know when it's that kind of community is that they usually pick up the language, the words of the one who's the leader. We knew one group in Washington, D.C., and if within the first two sentences they used the word exciting, you knew they were from that group, because the head of that group, everything was exciting. If you have to pick up someone else's vocabulary, then you maybe haven't brought your own individuality to give the group some diversity. The loosely structured community. This is the one where he says you put your arm down in the quicksand to find the bottom. My phrase for that is, how do you attack an 8-foot marshmallow? That there really is not enough there for you to deal with. It's like talking to someone. You never have dialogue, fruitful dialogue, unless that person has some opinions of their own, and you know what they are. Then you can talk. If there are two of us and when we agree, one is unnecessary. That it doesn't mean you're intolerant if you have strong convictions. In fact, when you have some strong convictions, then you're not always promoting some idea that you're not quite sure of yourself, and therefore it's hard to get along with. So don't apologize if there are some boundaries to the community and they know what they are. Another phrase I like is, some communities have so little structure that when you do make a frontal attack, it's like a frontal attack on an open door. And then, you know, there really was no fun to it at all in the dialogue. Exact opposite of that is a community that's too rigid. They know what's best for you, and therefore they police heavily, and you live by all the rules. A neighbor boy, a son of a neighbor of ours in West Virginia, went to Bob Jones University. There's barbed wire, a fence around the whole place with barbed wire at the top. The instructions said no radios, or I don't know, in bed by 10:30. The whole thing is very, very rigid, and very little freedom of expression, and very little trust of people. I'm going to skip the one uncomfortable. It seemed to me that was only at the typical religious community that tried too many liturgical innovations. That one wasn't very helpful for me. The last one was the mothering community, where the members are taken care of like they are dependent children, where there's no requirement of maturity, only a requirement of membership, where the weak are protected by those a little stronger, and nobody grows. Then the last paragraph. Communities are like people, and basically like the people who compose them. There are genuine ones and there are phonies. There are those who bring out the best in others, who are used by others. Community living is a step above personal living. One must learn the latter before one can perfect the former. Community living provides the individual with the opportunity to improve himself where he is imperfect, to correct himself where he is wrong, to strengthen himself where he is weak, to give of himself to something beyond himself, namely the image of God which he finds reflected in others who must remind him so much of himself. Okay, that's enough for the introduction. Any responses that you want to make? It's in the light of our possibilities for community at Holden, but I don't mean it to be a forum I don't mean it to be a forum like we've had on a couple concrete Holden issues. I want it to be as general as you want. Karen.
I'd like to ask a question about the idea that if you look for your own identity in the community, that you have to come to it with your own identity. That you can't expect the community to give your identity. Okay, is there a distinction there between finding your identity through individual members of the community? It seems to me that all of us find our identity as we relate to other individual people.
Mm-hmm.
And that, is there a difference between making the community give you your identity or that the fact that individual members would do that?
What do you think?
Probably has something to do with relying on too heavily, I would guess, if you really put all your cards on that the group is going to give it to you, instead of being open about it approaching it with being an individual and not expecting that's going to come automatically. I agree, though, that that's true. There's no way you can grow by yourself. I think you mentioned that.
Mm-hmm. And does it seem to be a contradiction in his own writing that you don't come to the group trying to find your identity, and yet he says it's a place where you find a mirror and therefore you do grow? Are you talking about
it? You find your identity, some identity.
Right, maybe Paul wants to speak to it. Okay.
Well, one of the community groups I've lived in, an example is very striking, because one of the women in that community did nothing outside of whenever we did something as a group. And so whenever we were outside, whenever I was doing something on my own, she was just sitting in a room, just wouldn't even leave the place. And when two of us would want to go out and see a movie that night, if we didn't include her, she would feel left out and make us feel guilty. Mm-hmm. And so that we didn't ever have the freedom to make any decisions.
So that was an instance where she refused to have an identity role.
Yeah, she wouldn't do anything. She didn't have any projects. All she would do, she would cook for the community and do the dishes, you know, and all that kind of thing to make it look like there was a reason for her being there. But beyond that, you know, she depended on us for our social activities, for doing things, and for initiating things, and that gets very tiring. And then it becomes a burden, because then you always have to feel like you have to include this person. And sometimes, you know, you like to do things with the freedom of it, not having to be the whole group. That there's a freedom to say yes and no in community. Because community isn't always the same group of people together, here and there and all over the place. The strength of community, I think, the strength of difference is being able to do things outside of it and having a unity that is closer than physical together.
Don't you think Holden's phrase, it's a good place to come to only if it's a good place to leave, is speaking to a similar point? Karen?
Well, I'm sorry you said that exactly at this moment, because I was about to say that I really feel very, very much that in a great way I discovered an identity of my own. Here.
All right.
And I haven't left. I've been here 9 years. Long.
But doesn't,
so maybe I
doesn't,
have left, you know, maybe it's...
Okay, but doesn't that phrase not only mean when you physically leave, but if you function as an individual,
yes,
as Karen,
exactly, yeah,
anywhere,
yeah,
then Holden has been a strength. If
yes,
the only place you can really function is here,
yeah,
then you've gotten some
that's
identity right, which is not you.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And I've seen that happen.
Uh-huh.
And I think I could say very honestly, maybe the first couple of years I was here, I couldn't see myself functioning, you know, as myself out.
Uh-huh.
I hate to say outside, but we all say it, so I didn't say it. But I, you know, and I now do feel that I'm me, and that I can be me wherever I go.
Mm-hmm.
What's the meaning, what's the meaning of identity?
I'm sure he has a technical psychiatrist's meaning to it, and I'm not sure what that means, but maybe it's worth us getting some content to it that we can agree upon. I mean, he undoubtedly has a psychiatric meaning to a person's own identity. To somebody,
to me, it's that you have work, but I'm not John's wife, but I'm Mary, and I have my own identity because I have my own interests and my own personality and my own thoughts. And it seems like if everybody came to Holden without much of an identity, you wouldn't have Holden. You'd have a bunch of a very weak, wishy-washy kind of people. I think Holden can take a certain amount of people who don't yet know their identity or who are trying to get their head together or whatever the phrase is. But I think if the majority of us came with no personal identity at all, it would be a disaster. But I do think it's important that we accept people who are struggling and looking, because that's what we're doing.
What does it mean to you, John, when you use it or read it? What?
Well, I'm not too sure yet.
All right.
it's a knowledge of yourself as being somehow different, or, well, I don't know whether it's different, but a knowledge of yourself being a unity that is not dependent on what Brooks thinks of me.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I'm me whether you like me or not. I'm sorry. that's a very arrogant way of putting it, but we have to find a definition for ourselves that if we are violating that definition, we're being false.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel very strongly, though, that one of the things that can happen in Christian community, and probably in others too that aren't Christian, but a strong affirmation of each person, good affirmation, does allow them to discover their identity. So a lot of people do discover an identity in community, and
mm-hmm,
that's good, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. As long as they're discovering themselves,
yeah,
not getting not getting a corporate identity, not seeing themselves only in that group, or...
That's a distinction.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that was worth the talking about it. Paul?
No.
Oh. Oh, all right. Other areas of the paper or the discussion so far that either raised a question or that you want to kind of underline and say, yeah, that was helpful. Either one, it doesn't. Sig.
The essay makes a great deal of potentials for growth in community. And I'm wondering about how much growth there can really be in a large community as compared to a small one. It seems to me, in order to do a whole lot of mirroring, or getting a whole lot of feedback, or even being open to people, there has to be the establishment of a basis of trust. And that's not achieved easily, quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that we are ready to be open, to let down our masks, first of all with one person.
Mm-hmm.
Does speak about not looking to the community for love.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder just how much you can look to a community for the kind of growth they're speaking about. I think that it comes first of all from one individual with whom you can have a very intimate, sharing, open, honest, authentic
mm-hmm.
relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that it can grow from this to a very small group. And it seems to me that if the group gets larger than 8 or 10, there isn't going to be a whole lot of that kind of growth taking place.
Mm-hmm.
So as I think of a community like Holden, I wonder if he's talking about a community in that sense. Or you speak of the group in Washington, D.C., where you had the kind of honesty and openness. I presume it was not as large.
Correct.
As this group, and with, of course, a more sustained group over a longer period of time. I just wondered what your reaction would be to that. It strikes me, and may I add further, that everyone does need at least one person with whom we can be close, intimate, open, honest, and so forth. And you can live in a community like this and not have a person
mm-hmm.
like that
mm-hmm.
For quite a while, maybe, or maybe not at all, for months at a time. And I think we are really greatly deprived when we can't find a friend.
Mm-hmm. Let's stick on that a little bit. Seems to me one of the things that the article would say and that Sig has picked up on is you cannot have some expectations about Holden that are unrealistic. And maybe a point of clarity is not to expect the kind of intimacy that 30 people or 10 people would have who were going to be together for 2 years. Maybe the expectations and what you expect from it are part of the reality factor. Will?
Yeah, I was thinking that yesterday with so many people that it seems that sometimes pockets, say pockets of intimacy like that develop here. But then I was thinking too that when so many people leave so often, it's quite hard for that to happen. I can't think of anywhere else where 8 or 10 people or friends could say would suddenly be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly leave the place. It'd usually be that if I were to lose that many people at once, I would have to leave the place.
Mm-hmm.
And the place would go on. But then here, it's the other way around. But so many people leave. It's, I don't know, that time we have is so short here. Or it can be so short, some if they want it. That's not to devalue the shorter times people have here too. I'm sure they're valuable. I don't know if they're a community in this sense, in this paper, or what Sig's talking about. I don't know, maybe they are.
What? If you're interested in a proposal for Holden being very different and being much closer and long term, Al Pitcher made a plea for that, and I listened to the tape this winter. By and large, that has not been what Holden is. The other side of that is most of the people who come to Holden will never have the opportunity for that long-term close community, like a religious house of studies or an order of priests or nuns. Most of them will find their community in congregations and in well, almost casual contacts with people. So maybe Holden gives them at least the chance for some level of celebration and fellowship and community, that they see a possibility for at least some aspects of that, even though it doesn't have the intimacy and the closeness. They do experience. One of the things about Holden is you get into it very quickly because you're here a short period of time, so that the possibilities, you have to really explore them quickly because of the transiency. But I don't know, maybe.
It seems like for most people, Holden's a retreat center, and it's doing its job that way. Like,
yeah.
So it gives people an idea or a taste and a desire to use those ideas somewhere else.
That was.
Go ahead.
That was kind of my understanding of Holden as being a community in itself, yes, but. The important thing at Holden was to export to the congregations or whatever this sense of community. Now, how can you be a community with 500 people in the village?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't do that. But at least it has, and I think it has in our congregation, furthered the idea of. A greater sense of community. We don't, no longer do we consider St. Luke just a place to come Sunday morning. It is growing as a, and we're finding within our congregation a group for us that is a community in this sense almost. But that's a group of maybe 8 or 10 couples. There are other groups within our congregation doing the same thing. This is one thing that I think Holden has exported.
Mm-hmm.
It's given away.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's one of the things it can do best.
You've heard me say this when I first came. My hope, and I don't know how much we can maximize it, my hope is when someone comes here briefly, that instead of getting the feeling that this is a place that has a staff which runs a retreat center in which they rent a room, that they get the idea this is a community of people that have as one of the things they're about the sharing of this place and their fellowship with a lot of people over large groups of people for short periods of time, and that people move into that briefly instead of renting a room at a resort or a hiking or whatever else this could be, they experience some kind of caring and closeness and worship and reflection, and at least get to touch that while they're here. And I think you can do, I think we do a lot of that. I mean, I think Holden has always been some maximizing of that kind of feeling. What that means for those people who are here, how much intimacy or closeness they have, that may be where the problem on this one comes. Yeah.
I feel like somewhat of an observer, so maybe
all right.
I have a different perspective. I think that what Sig was talking about when there are 8 or 10 people, you can have an intense kind of community, and then, you know, as it gets larger, the size of Holden, then, you know, some of the intensity changes. And I think that what has happened to me in the outside world is that the community has gotten really confusing. It's totally out of proportion to what I can imagine. And one thing that Holden really is a place that has a sense of community. And I know that you could probably constantly question what that means, but I can only say that I sense it. It has a purpose for being, and it's small enough so that it's manageable and people can feel it and feel the closeness of individuals on all sorts of bases. It's not like when you're outside, some of your friends play basketball, and then some of your friends go to church, and some of your friends do this. It's really confusing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, Scott.
For the thing you mentioned about community, you know, the guests coming and becoming part of the community, I would see one of the problems, reason that wouldn't happen so much, is that there is such the thing of the guest. Things are done for the guests. Staff will eat at this meal so the guests, you know, can sleep in longer. things are done for the guests. Staff will eat at this meal so the guests, you know, can sleep in longer.
But what?
No, like during the weekend where, you know,
Yeah, okay,
and that would seem like that would, you know, work against what you want, because you really get community when you have to either change yourself, or when something bad goes wrong, or when you have to go up against something, when you're challenged. Then I see community building, because if everything goes your way, it's the community, you know, doesn't become so much, then you're more of a guest. Whereas if they, you know, if there was no real distinction like that, and they would have to come to a different meal or go out of the way, I could see where they'd become more of the community instead of someone treated special.
We, well, I don't know that we can solve the thing. I have tried, at least in words, to give a different impression, and I don't know if this is in writing or in writing letters or... Everyone who comes to Holden, in my mind, everyone who comes to Holden is coming to the community called Holden Village with some contribution. The staff is contributing their time. The guests don't have the opportunity usually to spend 3 weeks and contribute to their time. They contribute financially, or the place wouldn't be here. The faculty contributes their time. Most of them could probably get an honorarium teaching somewhere else. So if we could see that there is not an order of priority in the contribution, whether it's financial, labor, teaching, and even a division within the labor of leading a session here or splitting wood. If we could break through the hierarchies of whose contribution is more important, that would be a step. I guess one of the things that will always make that difficult is the staff is here long enough for some orientation, and therefore I think we feel a little more comfortable in asking them to do some things. The guest who just came, you don't have time to go through all of that. But I think a lot of faculty pitch in with work, a lot of staff pitch in with leading matins and some teaching, and I think some guests pitch in. Anytime I've been here, are very happy. They really feel more part of the community, as you say, if there's some work project for them to do. So I don't think it's without some fuzzing of those lines, but we do use faculty, staff, and guests. And as soon as you start using those, you got some people pigeonholed. Yeah. Ken and then Karen.
Oh, I
think just on community, is what helps to make one work is the fact that people that come into the community and bring their identity and make it part of the community and give it to the community. But also the fact that each person is a necessary part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
If that quits and the community does break down, and in kind of a way of holding it works, because it is always changing. In a long-term community, you get your click groups or your social clubs, and then a lot of needs get met with a few people, you know, your subgroups. Where here, you know, the long-term friendships don't get made. And there's a lot has been said about people that have left a hole in the community. And then the other people come in, and we need those people to fill those holes. And that way I think that it works a lot better than any other community, because it is a short term. And what hit me is I think we've got two communities in the summer, the guest community and the staff community. And I think we're thinking along the lines of making it into one big community. And what really hit me, that's one thing that really hit me hard. When I came in as a guest, there was a big difference between the staff and the community. There were two separate things. And I was very interested, but I felt like there was an isolation. Like, you know, meeting the staff was like meeting, you know, crossing forbidden territory. Almost. It was maybe a class line.
You came as a guest first?
Yeah.
One time? I see.
That was during the summer, right? Middle of July.
Uh-huh.
You know...
Just a minute, Wads. Karen and Paula, and
well,
then
I,
Wads.
I'll respond to what Ken said. I am very sensitive to what you're saying. And I think it happens most of the time with young adults, such as yourself, who come. because so many of the staff are their peers, and it's always been a problem at the village. Sometimes it's been a, it's come out as a really as a real hostility between. Back in the early days of Holden, they used to have what they called a deacon, and it was 2 weeks that were geared especially for young adults. And one year when that group came, there was like open warfare between the staff and the young adults. And that is a really, thing that you experience. And I'm aware of it, even though I've never been on the guest side. Well, I was once, but I was so big in the playlist and all this. But it's something I think we need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if work on is the right word for it. But it's something we need to recognize, that when there are not a lot of young adults that come here, there are very few. Maybe if there's one or two a week, it's unusual. And so they don't really find their own community, I mean, in that small group. And the staff is, well, one of the barriers is staff is all is working and doing jobs. And maybe we need to find more volunteer jobs for those young adults to be doing while they're here. Because the minute they spend a morning working with someone, then they'd be part of the community.
Yeah.
And they'd be part of the staff. And that happens sometimes, too.
Or things like the lift at night, or when if the staff has gathered, including the one or two young adults who are not here with a family, in your events that night or your activities, obviously I'm sure they would enjoy Holden more that week. Okay, Paula, and then Watts.
Well, I haven't been here as a guest, but it kind of surprises me that you're saying that there's not a lot of young adults when you come as a guest, or maybe just apart from the staffing that they're in their own group and you're in your own, because it just surprises me. For one thing, when I was reading about Holden and from the letter I was sending out about what the community would be like, got the impression that staff was part of our responsibility was to be as outgoing and warm to the guests as we are to other staff members. And a little harder, like in those big groups that were here on the weekends. It's a little harder because they're really pretty much all clipped anyway. But like in the first group, the Adams group, I found a lot of time to talk with and even get to know a little bit some of the people. It seems like the guests get pretty much attention.
Let me give you two things so that you just keep them in mind when summer comes. One is, you remember the first day you don't, because you got sick and went to bed the first day.
No, I didn't.
The first day, Paul Halverson and I used the same phrase in orientation, you feel a little bit like a visitor on a strange planet, and you think everybody there knows everybody else very well, and I'm the only outsider. Well, you multiply that by being a guest and see how well the staff knows one another, and the kitchen crew's having a good time. All right, so you really feel like an outsider. Secondly, the longer you go into the summer, and the more hellos and goodbyes you've said, and the very few close friends, you sometimes just don't want to have to meet another person. You just want to sit down and have a nice talk with somebody you already know. So there are a couple dynamics that make it very understandable. It doesn't mean you're snobbish. It's just kind of a natural dynamic that I think we ought to remind ourselves of once in a while. Wads, when you're behind me, you get shunted off, so just...
I kind of forgot my train of thought.
Oh.
Listening to all this wisdom over there. No, but, you know, listening to all this, I think it was Socrates, didn't he say you should know yourself?
Yeah.
You should know that. Know thyself. Well, that deals with identity, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing on earth for me to know myself. But my experience, I came out here in September with a church group, you know, and Sig brought it out, this one-to-one basis, you know, coming from Holden. Well, Andy somebody met us at the bus.
Yeah.
And I says to Andy, he says, I meet all the buses. I says, what do you do here? I never knew him from a hole in the ground before. And he says, well, they call me a plumber, but I'm really not a plumber, but I meet all the buses. And then Karen was there. Well, that was great. I was here for a week, and I used to send her up to the garage in the morning. You weren't there, Ken, at the time. And drink coffee with the boys, and this is one-to-one, see, and that was refreshing. Then one night, right in this place, sitting with a young guy after the meeting, well, his name was Ken, too. It wasn't you, Ken. And he started pouring out his past life to me. And so I told him a lot of things that I'd never tell you people about myself. One-to-one again. We sat there for an hour. Just a delightful... This was Holden. I was a guest. He was on the staff up there at the garage. And pretty soon, after a long visit, he whips out a little pocket testament. He says, would you write in this? He called me Watts, too. And I did. I thought a beautiful message, if I do say so myself. This was Holden, one-to-one. Now, I've been here about a month. And this is things that I'm getting, and it's shaping me, I think. I don't know, hopefully. So that I go out of here a better man, or a better young man. And, what was it? Oh, yeah.
Don't get into your high school speech. That's next Monday night.
I've been working on that.
I know.
They may tell me to leave after that one. But anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, today I went into the woods. I had a little spare time. And with Tom, I guess I was assigned to Tom. And here was another young fellow by the name of Paul, and then there was a nice, delightful young girl swinging. Wasn't it you? Swinging one of these mallets. Why, I couldn't keep up with them. But we shared out there. I was gaining from them, and hopefully some of the things that I said or did rubbed off on them. And well, so it goes. Then late afternoon, and I'm not blown about the word, but I mowed a little bit for your fellow. Matt Furman, the other
Omar.
Omar.
Omar. So I share with him a little bit. And this is on the one-to-one, am I getting too long-winded?
No, it's all right.
One-to-one basis thing. But then I get into small groups. And pretty soon, here's the a bigger group. And so in this sharing, this, to me, is the composite of Holden Village. Whether I was a guest or am on the staff, it's beautiful. And hopefully, no, I'm giving a little something of myself, but I know I'm getting a lot more out of Holden than I'm able to give. But this is shaping me, my identity, Bill. It's shaping my identity. I still don't know myself, according to Socrates, but this is what it's done for me. Amen.
Okay. Mary?
Well, I guess the biggest problem I have with community is the distinction between helping, well, I don't even know how to say it. If community is supposed to be a mirror, you know, when are you to accept me for who I am, and when do you help me grow by pointing out things? Mm-hmm. You know, when are you confrontive to me, and when do you just say, well, that's her, we have to accept
that's
her.
That's the most difficult issue. That's, for me, that's been the most frustrating, difficult thing that I've ever had run across. It's really hard.
I don't understand the question for sure.
Okay. When? Let me give, well, either Mary give it again or I'll try. You want to phrase it once more, Mary, and then we'll...
I'll refer to this one.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, just the difference between accepting me as I am, because I really believe that when I accept you as you are, that's when you grow. Because you know, I know my faults as well as, well, let's do it the other way. If you accept me for who I am, then I'm going to grow. Because the fact that you might love me without telling me all my faults mm-hmm. is really beautiful. I know the areas that I need an awful lot of work in and how I want to change. And the more you love me, the more I want to change. You know, I don't know psychologically if that's good or bad, but that's how I feel. So when you're not putting me down, I seem to be able to grow more. But I'm not sure that's true, because sometimes I need to be confronted and say, look, this is how you come off, this is how you make me feel. And in the spirit of community, I think we have to talk to one another about those things. And I'm not going to grow if nobody ever confronts me about myself. So when do you accept me and when do you confront me?
It's the mothering community idea. It's, yeah.
Paul, were you going to speak to it or...
Yeah,
Now it had a good series of articles and soldiers on compassion, not without confrontation. And it seems to me that if I confront you out of love, out of a deep concern, not to change you, but, you know, that kind of dialogue is different. Tim, in his lecture, talked about, you know, the pain in the two high school he was leaving, you know, and said that we weren't honest with him sooner than because of him. You know, it seems to me that if that confrontation of honesty had happened before him, that maybe they might not have left. I think when it's done out of love and out of honesty, from the depth of your heart, it's genuine. But it's not genuine when I have my mind made up that, you know, there's really something about you that you have to change. And it's more in irritation. I mean, psychologists sometimes say that the things that bother us in other people are sometimes the things that bother us most in ourselves. You know, and sometimes my wanting to change you is probably encouraging me wanting to change myself. And that's not done out of love.
I think maybe the only way to respond is the way Paul has, with some illustrations, because I don't know how you could have a rule, Mary. I don't think you're asking for that, but Tim's Vespers would be one of them. Apparently some people were aware of behavior or action and breaking of the rules prior to the dismissal and said, but I didn't want to say anything because then they wouldn't like me. I think we're talking about what was really concerned for them. Maybe them not liking you or honestly leveling, not because you were angry, but because there might be a possibility for growth. Or Mary will be the only one that knows the illustration, so I'm not talking about somebody that you know. Someone asked me to write a letter of reference so that he could go to seminary. And instead of that, I told him why I would not write a letter of reference at this time and tried to point out some characteristics that he had shown in our community of Christ that I thought were really deterrents from him being a pastoral leader, and very painful. And the next day he came by to say that was the first time anybody had pointed those things out and had had the concern enough to say something, and so it was a growing experience. But I don't do that very often. Don't get the idea that was easy for me, and I don't do it often, but I think that's what we're talking about. I mean, there was a specific request, and instead of writing a typical say-nothing letter about how long I've known him and not really say anything about what I thought his abilities were, I told him why I was not writing the letter. And that's the kind of thing that I think if you have a friend that does that, that's kind of a blessing. And if a community, and I don't know, Sig, whether in a short period of time you have that or not. I mean, we're still back to one of the questions you have. I understand that. But I think some things are applicable. Yes, Brooks.
I'm on a different track.
That's all right.
I guess I consider a big piece of my life a search for community, and I find it in only fleeting pieces. Not that I haven't had a big 8-year experience or had a whole experience. I think the real experience of community I've had, I guess I'm looking again for the third leg now, has been when I've been caught up in mission with some people.
Yeah.
I think community can make me more than myself. I mean, my needs today are, I need to have hope. I need to have energy. I need to be an actor in human history. I need to feel that I can make a difference. I need to have a vision that's larger than myself, something that energizes me. And I have to have community for that. And I'm looking for it. But my community has to be energized by a vision. It has to compel me and say, hey, there's a better world, and if we do it together, we can change some things. We can make a difference. We the community. And we'll probably grow too. You know, but first the vision.
Mm-hmm. Sig.
I'd like to come back to Mary's observation about confronting people. It seems to me that it's seldom helpful to confront, criticize, or find fault. Grant you that there are exceptions. But it strikes me that what is needed is not someone to point out our faults, but someone that will affirm us as children of God, as redeemed in Christ, as being of dignity and worth. will give us the kind of acceptance that God gives to us. And in a relationship like that, I think there can be some mirroring. But the two-way thing, as a mirror is, we talked about knowing yourself. There's a lot of psychological truth in making yourself known.
Mm-hmm.
As a healthy approach to relationships. And I think when you have this kind of a basis where there's affirmation and acceptance, then one can open up and we can reveal our faults to one another and be helped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a much more effective way. And I think to go up to someone who is almost a total stranger and say, hey, I don't think you ought to be doing that.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about.
Well, we are talking about in that drug thing, for instance.
It's
somebody
who's your very best friend.
Yeah. If this person is your friend and you have this kind of a trust, then I think admonition can be fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
But I would distinguish between admonition and fault finding.
Well, I was thinking more of accountability to the community, I think. I mean, I don't think you have a community if there's no way for people to be accountable to it. Then it's just a group of people who...
I don't know if I follow exactly what you're coming at now. I thought you spoke before about confronting people and maybe their lack of responsibility or something like that.
Yeah, to me that's accountability in a community, but you're saying you don't think that's ever called for, or very rarely, unless there's a very deep trust relationship between two people.
Well, that's what I feel about it. To me, it's somewhat a distinction between, let's say, John the Baptist and Jesus. John the Baptist was out there really laying it on, sinners, you vipers, and so on. But when Jesus spoke, let's say, to the Samaritan woman with all her faults, there wasn't that confrontation.
Yeah, but he told her to go and sin no more, didn't he?
That was the final word. There might be a whole lot of acceptance and respect. Other dynamics going on there that made that a successful encounter.
You know, I kind of like Sig's approach there. It's one of leading rather than confronting. And I think that's, I don't know if you'd call it tact, but you're leading the person into different concept rather than confronting them. You know, it's pretty hard to sit in judgment on a person and then say, well, this is maybe what you should do, and then, even on a one-to-one basis, but if you can lead them. I kind of agree with Siegel with that.
I don't think we've solved the dilemma, and it may be a strong, I mean, it may really be a difficult one. He calls for a caring community that's not a mothering community. Well, that's a tough one. I mean, I think that's the problem that we're trying to articulate. Couple more comments, and then we're going to break. Paul?
Out of my faith in community and with people, the toughest aspect of community living that I've had to go through and learn, and I think sort of what we're talking about today about confrontation, is learning how to affirm different other people. People who think differently, who have different habits in mind, mm-hmm. knowing that those differences are genuine, mm-hmm. that I am not going to confront them to make them like me, mm-hmm. and that in that difference is a richness and diversity that I've learned. Mm-hmm. For example, on Monday, Judy Grofeld was in our small group discussion. You know, we differ like the north and south ends of a magnet, but I still really like her. You know, I have a lot to learn from her, even though we differ. You know, that doesn't mean we're still not going to challenge one another, but I think when you can accept difference in people, and you can people to grow as who they are as people.
Well, what about when, because of their differences, they're hurting people, and
mm-hmm.
I mean really hurting people.
Yeah.
And you hate to see that happen to you, and you hate to see that happen to your friend, then don't you think confrontation is really important?
You can at least, it seems to me from what we've said, that you at least say, point up what's going on, and not be afraid to point it out. I think you can do that without squashing people, don't you? Point up the amount of hurt going on? I think we'd be opening up a whole new...
Well, one thing, too, I think that's unique. I don't understand all the what went on this winter with the drugs and whatever, but it, you know, it's mentioned that Holden is a place for people to go out. And, you know, if there are things that just plain don't work in the outside world or in any community, I think it's a responsibility of this community to let someone know that it doesn't pass, because you're just setting somebody up for failure. And I, you know, I, that might be a test of when to say something. You know, people can be different from you and you can still love them, and that's fine, but boy, if something doesn't work and they're just going to get hurt in the long run,
yeah,
it's a responsibility to say something.
Yeah. Bill, I'm going to make yours the final.
Well, I was going to bring it to a very trivial matter, to somebody's habitually late to dish keep. Do you confront them, or do you mother them?
What would you do?
I'd confront them.
Okay.
I'd say, get your so-and-so over there. Well, yeah, sure, but I mean,
habitually.
Like,
all the time.
Let me go back to the first thing I said. I personally think one of the greatest blessings we have is to live in community. I don't think it was an accident that the invitation of our Lord was to a supper, and that means a group of people when we experience His presence. And I'm not a Greek scholar, but when you eat and drink damnation unto yourself by not discerning the body, the Greek word there is not flesh, but soma, the corporate body. I think when you don't discern the corporateness of the Christian faith, we miss something of the blessings that He has in store for us. I think community is a gift, always, always. I think there are some things you can do to create a climate where perhaps the gift has a better chance of taking place, but not any more than that. It is a gift. And I think if we're open to the gift, we really can find it wherever we are. And I'm sure that you can find it, or we can find it at Holden. One of the things, and he's sick with this crud tonight, so I hope that he doesn't mind. The other morning I said to Tim, are you sad the last couple days? He said, I don't think so. I said, I've looked twice at least daily, and you seem to kind of have a sad countenance. He said, I think you have found me in my frequent times of nostalgia recently. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I hate to go. I guess I look at the mountains and I look at Holden, I realize I'm leaving, and it makes me sad. And I said, well, I'm glad there's some sadness for your leaving. He said, oh, there's lots of sadness. I'm going to miss it. Even the hassles I'm going to miss. and if that's true, then it seems to me there's been a kind of community that when we have that experience, we can really celebrate it. So I thank you for your interest. I didn't mean this was the only article on it, but it seemed to me it stimulated some discussion, and when the gift comes, let's give thanks for it.